Good morning. It's August 13th, 2015. We are at the Freiburg New Church Assembly in the second session. My name is Reverend Ken Turley, and the title of my talk as we discuss mothers in the Bible is God as Mother. As always happens, we choose these titles somewhat in advance. And then as I begin to research and develop my ideas, the talk goes way different from what I had thought of about in the middle or at the beginning. But anyway, for those who don't know, I am a Swedenborgian. I have been all my life, even when I didn't know it. I've been a Swedenborgian minister for nearly 30 years. And it's through Swedenborg's writings that I have found my way into a meaningful relationship with the living Word, the glorified Christ. Understanding the inner sense of the Bible through correspondence, understanding salvation of the soul as an ongoing process of spiritual regeneration, understanding heaven and hell as states of being rather than arbitrarily imposed reward and punishment, and understanding that the variety of faith traditions are like the jewels in the crown of heaven. These things that I have learned through Swedenborg have been my saving grace. And I owe it all to the writings of Swedenborg. The Swedenborgian Church has been the source and place of my rebirth and nurturing and maturing as a spiritual being. Yet now, at this late stage of life, I find myself at a point where my relationship with the Mother Church that bore me is changing in the same way the child becoming an adult finds their relationship with the mother that bore them changing. I have discovered, much to my consternation, that my Mother Church is not perfect. There are flaws and imperfections in what I have for so long seen with the accepting innocence of a child's eyes. Perhaps you've gone through this experience with your own parents at one time or another. The childish innocence disturbed to find out that the parents are not perfect. Well, now, without rejecting everything, I find myself in a process of sorting out all that I have been giving, keeping that which is of lasting value and will always be a part of who I am, and leaving behind that which is of no use to me, that I must put aside. The kind of thing which Swedenborg, as we will hear, calls hereditary evils. This is, however difficult and challenging and at times painful, a normal, essential, and in fact inevitable step in the process of becoming a mature and independent spiritual being. I say this to you this morning because in exploring the concept of God as Mother and all of the other aspects of Mother in the writings, I have come upon one of the things that has always troubled me in my relationship to the writings of Swedenborg, and an area in which I have had to reject and find for myself a way to understand and believe. The issue is the correspondential meaning and the resulting place and purpose of women in the Lord's creation. As would be expected, the genesis of the female dynamic begins with birth and the concept of mother. I'd like to share some excerpts from the Bible and then from Swedenborg's writings, and then I will explain my problem. Once we get past the scripture readings, I want you to note that I've attempted to evolve the English that Swedenborg's Latin has been translated into in order to be gender inclusive. Wherever I encounter the word man, I've tried to replace it with person or human being. Singular cases pronouns are often changed to plural. References to God have been made gender inclusive. However, references to the Lord when speaking of Jesus Christ before the glorification have remained masculine. So here's the first important passage as we normally read it, and then I'll follow that with an attempt to make it gender inclusive. And God said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. And then that's from the King James Version. And now we have this contemporary English version of the same passage. God said, "Now we will make humans, and they will be like us. We will let them rule the fish, the birds, and all other living creatures." So God created humans to be like himself. He made men and women. And you'll notice that even in that valiant attempt to be gender inclusive, they don't quite make it. So here's my problem. As we can see, God is always referred to as, and by implication, if not by assumption and actual practice, then conceptualized and believed to be male. At the same time, human beings are referred to as male, unless it's deemed necessary to point out that the specific individual being referred to is in fact not male. Otherwise, human beings are referred to as male, with females included or not, depending on one's understanding of the word man. Now, for those who say that using the word man actually means men and women, may I point out how often Swedenborg says to us that it is nearly impossible to say one thing and actually believe something else. Now, returning to the nature of God and the question of gender, let's look at this quote. "Let us create man in our image and likeness, male and female." Now, if we take this passage to actually be the voice of God, which it's purported to be, then it would seem obvious that God is both male and female. Or at the very least, both male and female are equally the image and likeness of God. Let us create in our own image male and female. It doesn't say, let us create men in our image, and then we'll create women on the side. They're both referenced as being directly in the image and likeness of God. So if that's true, is not male and female both equally essential to the image and likeness of God? Part of our problem is that the Hebrew culture, out of which our word, our Bible comes, and our whole cultural language and referential perspective is for the most part patriarchal. And the European culture from which we have most directly come has been, at least up until the last 50 years, almost exclusively patriarchal in emphasis. And the English language, which we are still immersed in, simply has no inclusive pronoun, and has and is not, and it is not surprising, although unfortunate, that the image and likeness of God we have inherited as a result is primarily male. Today, I would like to explore the feminine aspect of God. My purpose is to point out that it is and always has been there to find. It has been underemphasized and even intentionally hidden. But I would propose that that has been the work of a male-dominated culture attempting to serve its own self-interest and is not the intention of a God whose essence is gender inclusive and whose image and likeness the species closest to the divine essence is created in is both male and female. The ubiquitous usage of the male pronoun in referring to the divine is not something I hold Swedenborg accountable for. He, as well, has fallen victim to the limitations of the English language, and that at the hands of his translators in the early 1800s. We really have no inclusive pronouns unless we resort to pluralizing. I recall to mind that repeatedly Swedenborg is adamant in his statement that it is impossible to hold a unity of the divine in our minds while speaking of a trinity of separate beings. He says this repeatedly in the discussions about the concept of the Trinity. You can't believe in a God who is one and yet speak as if God is three persons. Given this, repeated over and over, I would suggest that it is impossible for us to hold a concept of God that is inclusive of male and female gender while continually referring to the divine as He. It is difficult, perhaps impossible, and probably at this point futile to designate whether the culture and language define the belief or whether the belief defines the culture and language. This is one of those chicken or the egg kinds of questions that, well, for our purposes now, just go unanswered. However, even with that question remaining unanswered, it is not necessary to let the situation remain unaltered. I propose that we begin as individuals, as churches, and as a denomination, begin to discipline ourselves to change our language and a result, if necessary, our belief to understand and presume that God is not He, is not she, is not it. God, the marriage of divine love and divine wisdom flowing out into use and life in the world, is inclusive of all the pronouns we have to work with in the English language. God is neither father nor mother exclusively. Rather, God is both father and mother inclusively. Now, a quick look at the creation story suggests that God's self-image is pluralistic and inclusive. I will attempt to alter the language to that result. And that attempt ought to point out how difficult it is to use the English language and hold a concept of God which is gender inclusive. So let me try this. Then God said, "Let us make human beings in our image, in our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air, over livestock and over all the earth and over all the creatures that move along the ground." So God created human beings in God's own image. In the image of God, they created them. Male and female, God created them. And God blessed them. It gets a little clumsy to be consistent and in our use of inclusive pronouns. But please notice that in this passage, even in the gender-exclusive translations, God refers to self as us and creates human beings in the divine image and likeness as male and female. If male and female are in the image and likeness of God, then it is only logical to assume that God is male and female. We can be confident and rest assured in the knowledge that the divine parent is both father and mother. We do God as well as ourselves a serious disservice to continue referring to and a result, even if unconsciously, conceptualizing and believing in the divine as one or the other gender. Now, as for Jesus, often referred to as the Lord, at one point saying himself that he was one with God, I have to ask us to remember that Jesus became Jesus Christ, who became the risen and glorified Christ. God finited God's self into the form of Jesus. Swedenborg is adamant, however, that in completing the process of glorification, Jesus, who was the infinite God, having finited the divine self into the form of a human being and a male form, put off in the process of glorification everything that was human, and in so doing became fully divine. I will presume that, based on what I have shown earlier, that fully divine is inclusive of, if not simply above and beyond, the limitations and specifications of individual gender. In the Arcana 3599, subparagraph 2, Swedenborg writes, "The natural good of the Lord's infancy was divine from the Father, but human from the Mother. And so far as it was from the Mother, it was imbued with hereditary evil." And in 2519, goes on to say, "The human with the Lord was from the Mother, and thus infirm, having with it an hereditary thence, which Jesus overcame through combats of temptation and utterly expelled, insomuch that it had nothing left of the infirm and hereditary from the Mother, nay, at last, not anything whatever from the Mother, so that he entirely put off the maternal, so that he was no longer her son." Swedenborg here makes it clear that in the process of glorification, everything that was of the Mother, i.e. human and gender specific, was put off, and after the glorification was accomplished, the risen and glorified Lord was fully divine. What is also worthy of note is this comment by Swedenborg regarding the nature of Jesus even before the glorification. AC 3405. "The Lord was in an appearance of truth when he was in the natural human." The implication then that the Lord, even in the form of Jesus, the male carpenter's son, was only an appearance of truth. In other words, while Jesus by all outward appearances is male, and this has been confirmed by assumption and belief for countless generations, it is in fact only an appearance of truth. If we were to look within the outward appearance, we would find that which appears quite different. For now, we're left to speculate what that might be. My point being that upon glorification, Jesus Christ is no longer male or female, but as fully divine, inclusive of both genders. Now, I'd like to take a look at Swedenborg's correspondential concept of mother. The first reference that Swedenborg jumps into is regarding church as represented by the term mother. "The mother of all living things in Genesis corresponds to the church. It is called the mother from the fact that it was the first church. Mother corresponds to the affection of truth, which makes the church in a person." Remember, Swedenborg uses the word church to refer to any state of mind in relationship with God, whether that occurs in an individual, in a small community, in a denomination, in the Christian world, in the Lord's church on earth, which incorporates all faith traditions where people are sincerely in relationship to God. "3583, mother corresponds to the affection of spiritual truth, and then the church, because the church is a mother and is so called from truth and its affection. Thus, truth is a mother, and therefore by mother in the internal sense is signified truth, and in fact, the truth from which are the lower or derived goods and truths. I didn't get it included, but there's one place where Swedenborg says, in the internal sense, mother corresponds to truth, which are the lower or derived goods and truths, which are in fact evil, but in which are the lower goods and truths. And if you're getting confused by this, good, that's my point. In all these passages, by mother, in the internal sense, is meant truth, and in the supreme sense, the church, and in the ultimately supreme sense, the Lord as divine truth. And at the same time, mother, in the opposite sense, corresponds to falsity. So Swedenborg is quite specific in stating this correspondential relationship between mother and church. The correspondence is not difficult to understand, given that the church is the caretaker, provider, nurturer, and healer of so many people's spiritual well-being. And yet, in further confirmation of that relationship, we must also acknowledge that mother in the opposite sense means falsity. And although it is painful to acknowledge, we must acknowledge that just as there are mothers who are evil and have in one way or another had a destructive influence on the lives of their children, the church too has, more than we would like to acknowledge, been the source of evil, pain, and destruction in the lives of its family and its neighbors. We have only to look at the Crusades, the Inquisition, the church-sponsored persecution of various minorities, and most recently, the disturbing number of cases of child abuse at the hands of ordained clergy. Nonetheless, the evil of some does not, or at least should not, discount the countless number of good mothers and good and beneficial presence and works of the church and her clergy. However, it still, in my mind anyway, remains a legitimate question as to whether the church should be referred to as strictly feminine, or whether the marriage of masculine-feminine attributes is not a more accurate representation of all that the church is. And Swedenborg comes through. At least in one passage, he seems to offer us at least a crack in this door that has remained closed for so long. In AC 5581, Swedenborg writes, a mother, parentheses, as well as a father, close parentheses, corresponds to the church. But a mother corresponds to the church as to truth, for the church is a spiritual marriage, which is from good as a father and from truth as a mother. So even though there is this one reference out of countless references, Swedenborg does acknowledge that church is in some way inclusive of the father image of good and the mother image of truth. Now, let's set that aside for a moment, and I would like to look at one other aspect of Swedenborg's representation of the correspondence of mother that I find truly disturbing. One that I believe has led to any number of various kinds of categorizations, misconceptions, discrimination, and outright devaluing of women as a result. Touched on it earlier, but a few more quotes from AC 1414. The infirm which people derive from hereditary from the mother is a corporeal something which is dispersed when being regenerated. Every person's internal is from their father, and their external from their mother, or what is the same, the soul itself is from the father, and the body which the soul is clothed is from the mother. But the hereditary evil from the mother is of the external person. He also says, hell could not have approached the Lord if he had been born without evil adhering from the mother. And finally, this. From the mother, a person receives all that is external, In a word, the interior person or spirit itself is from the Father, but the exterior person or body itself is from the Mother. For the soul is implanted from the Father, and this begins to clothe itself in a little bodily form in the ovule, where whatever is afterwards added, whether in the ovule or in the womb, is of the Mother, for it has no increase from anywhere else. Think about that for a minute. Swedenborg seems to be saying that the spirit is from the Father, but the body and all that is natural, and hence all that is hereditary evil, is from the Mother. The implications of this stretch back to Adam being the innocent but unwitting dupe, and Eve being the temptress and responsible for all of the evils of humanity. And this has led to every modern conception of women being the source of and or the cause of sensual temptation and the failure to overcome it. It takes very little imagination to see how this has been extrapolated to assume that women are by nature different and the source of all human weakness and thus inferior in some fundamental way and are to be discounted in value, if not outright blamed, even for their own suffering at the hands of others. And needless to say, this conclusion is repugnant in the extreme. But all of this, and particularly Swedenborg, this is an example of one of his most basic and fundamental errors. In making women, i.e. mothers, responsible for all of the hereditary evil, he simply did not have all the information needed to come to the right conclusion. In saying that the Father implants the soul and everything else is from the Mother because there's no other input from the Father is the error, because Swedenborg did not know about DNA. If he did, he might very well have concluded that the male contribution to the newly created and evolving being keeps right on giving throughout the development of each being's life, as we know that the male DNA is just as much actively contributing to the ongoing growth and creation of a living being, even in the womb. It is simply incorrect to assume that all external and hence all hereditary evil is of the Mother exclusively, and the soul and hence no hereditary evil is of the Father. It's simply not right. The two genders join DNA in the womb and continue to blend and contribute and share responsibility for the ongoing growth and development of the newborn soul and body. Now, having said this, I want to give Swedenborg his due, and I'm going to end with two quotes. 3703, thus, truth is as a mother, and therefore by mother in the internal sense is signified truth, and in fact the truth from which are the lower or derived goods and truths. In all these passages, by mother in the internal sense is meant truth, and in the supreme sense, the Lord as to the divine truth. This is the very thing to which he was previously referring to as the hereditary evils. And then this: the paradoxes flowing forth from such a faith are many, as that the Lord, as to both soul and body, is from the Mother. So, with that paradox, I open the floor for discussion. Julie.
One of our favorite topics at Miss Philly Grill was discussing the role of men, of the male and female in a new human being. And we came to the conclusion that Swedenborg couldn't go beyond the science of his day, which was the science that the little animalcule was actually in the sperm and all the ovum did was contribute the external. So that thought was what promoted. However, there are people that are then concerned, well, then how did it really work with Jesus Christ's birth? But going back to your original thing of gender inclusive, whenever I give a service, I make it gender inclusive. Good. Whatever way I can do it is because to continue to promulgate a patriarchal idea of God as male, in my view, is heinous. And it's not something that I'm going to continue doing. So, thank you.
And I'll confess, in my early years as minister, I was very persistent in using gender-inclusive language, but I just sort of got worn down and got lazy and stopped doing it. And now, as I look back over my career, I really regret that, because we have to teach ourselves to speak in a term that accurately represents what we believe. We can't continue to use words which aren't true. I suppose we can pass it off as, well, we're talking in appearance of truth, and maybe that's good enough for Swedenborg, but I really don't think it's good enough for us in this day and age.
This is Trevor. I'd like to bring my father into this room briefly. He was fond of saying that the writings of Swedenborg are not a scientific textbook, they're a spiritual textbook, and to go there for scientific knowledge is just foolhardy. So if you take what Swedenborg says as scientific truth, you're missing the point, because it's a spiritual textbook and not a scientific textbook. Even though he was a scientist, he used the science of his day. That's and right. Not the science that we know today. So that's we shouldn't right. be going there for science facts.
I'm not going there for science facts. I'm saying that he, exactly. based on incorrect science, made conclusions about spiritual nature that are incorrect.
And that was my father's point as well. Yeah. And okay. the other one is just a random comment on something you said at the beginning of your lecture, how sometimes you find yourself writing and then the topic completely changes by the time you get halfway through. And he said basically he learned that you write a sermon and then you cross out the first two or three paragraphs because that was you, and by the time you got into what you were supposed to be talking about.
This is Allison Longstaff. I just thank you. It needs to be said again and again. I've found inside my own skin the legacy of thinking of God as male and men as better somehow is very deep, and it's going to take years and years of working through things to clear that from my system, if ever. So this morning I sang the second hymn quietly, intentionally, with she instead of he and divine instead of God and stuff like that, because for me, even God is male because there's a goddess, and so that makes God male, and we use it in a gender inclusive way, but it's sort of like when I say, when the writings say man, it's not leaving me in, and they're like, oh, everybody knows that man is everybody, and it's energetically, it's just not. It right. just is exclusive in a certain way, and it's taken me years to realize just how excluded I've felt and just come to accept it. So just singing that hymn with the female instead of the male, not to cancel the male, but just sort of balance that energy, and how it felt in my body was really different. So I wrestle with the same things you wrestle with, is like, well, how do I change this so it's inclusive? So I'll say the divine one, or I think George Dole says deity instead of God, and just sort of working with this constantly to try and figure out a way that is not excluding anyone. And it is tough in our language because we don't have the right pronouns. That's right. Thank you.
And I'll apologize again, because it was my intention to invite everyone to sing that last hymn using female pronouns just for the experience, which is something you can do anytime. Just substitute female pronouns for the male pronouns and just feel what that's like. It's probably going to feel odd and maybe even uncomfortable, which tells you something about how pervasive the imagery of the male pronouns is and how much we take it for granted. And it does influence your belief to put the words out of your mouth. So, Paulina.
Hello, everyone. I actually just wanted to offer a perspective from somebody who grew up in a different, with a different language as a first language. I was born in Russia, and in Russian we do have, like in French, you know, all words are either male or female or neutral gender. And so there are, although right now Russia is become very traditional and male dominated kind of patriarchal society, during the Soviet Union the effort was to equate men and women. In fact, in some situations women were promoted more just to kind of give it the extra boost. And we can argue whether it's a good thing or not, but actually what happened was, growing up, I've never considered that men were better or more superior in anything. You know, they were stronger, but in terms of intellectual ability, there's never been a kind of, you can't do math because you're a girl kind of thought at all. And in the language as well, there are nuances of, you know, God. Yeah, it's a male word, but there is a word for male which means male and female, right? So when you use that word, you are not thinking it's just men, it's also women. And so, but in English, you don't have words that are, you know, gendered, except that the Germanic influence, I think, has this. I've heard that son is male, even though it's not necessarily male. So I think it's a very interesting discussion to just be aware of where languages come from and how they shape us, because somebody who is not of English speaking that doesn't necessarily have kind of that hookup, I guess. But it's how we all as a society accept, do we think male is just male, or is it male and female? So I think it's a very, very important discussion and very fascinating in how people around the world developed. So thank you very much. I really enjoyed it.
And here's a little bit of somewhat related trivia. I just found out that one of my favorite composers, Alexander Borodin, who is a Russian composer, back in the early 1800s, he was a scientist, chemist by profession, and a musician on the side, but he was also a very strong advocate for women's rights in Russia in the early 1800s. So, Alexander Borodin, Mark Ray.
Little hesitant to bring this up because I haven't been here for quite a while. My name is Lori Turley. There's a word that's often used here that has a tremendous charge for me and has distanced me somewhat, and it's when we sing, "We'll do the best we can, stand by you like a man." That's been very hard for me to sing here, and I generally, on my own, always actually sing, "We'll do the best we can, stand by you in a jam." That's what I sing when we're here, and I don't, well, that was brought up several years ago and it wasn't changed, but just little tiny things like that do have a tremendous wider impact. So, just a thought.
I'd like to speak to what Lori just said. This is Trevor again. We, several years ago, as Lori did mention, this has come up, and there have been several people in the dining hall who have been singing several different lines for that one, and it's going to take a little while to get the change to happen all the way. Some people sing "Stand By You Like a Friend." Some people sing "Stand By You With a Plan." Some people sing what Lori said, which is "Stand By In a Jam." So I'm guessing that within 5 years or so, we're all going to coalesce and pick one of them by popular vote.
The perfect metaphor for the way this transformation in our language and in our unconscious belief system is going to take place. It's effort. It's not easy. It takes intention and it takes persistence.
Dave Keating, the Swedenborg Foundation is in the process of translating many of Swedenborg's works into modern English. And one of their prime directives is to have gender inclusive language, which I think you'll find if you read it. So I recommend the New Century Edition to everyone, and I'm very happy that they've decided to make e-books free. So it's very available, and please try it. And just a personal thing, I have my own version of the Lord's Prayer, and it begins, "Our Heavenly Parent." and which I prefer.
Aaliyah Wuffenden. I just wanted to share something that came up recently with my daughter, who is two, who's learning words. And I wanted to teach her, she's using boy and girl, and I wanted to teach her male and female, which as somebody who's studied science, I've always struggled with. And when I taught it to her, she wanted to know, why is it female? And I still don't have an answer for her.
The closest thing that I would suggest, I've proposed this theory, it's never gone very far, but if we could redefine our language, that man would be the inclusive word for all of human beings. Human would be the male side, and female would, a woman would be the female side. So you have the syllable man, and then you add hu for he's, and you add womb for females. I don't. Anyway, but that's never going to happen because our language is so already deeply entrenched in our culture. But we can begin to make these more superficial changes in usage of the words we have, and hopefully that will over time bring about a change in our conceptions.
Dave Keating again. English is a very flexible language, and I am hoping for a miracle. It's hard to understand how it could happen that there will be a gender-inclusive pronoun in common usage someday.
Yeah, you and Jerry Garcia waiting for a miracle.
Yeah. Hi, Guard Perry. Hey, enjoyed this whole thing tremendously. I heard Aaliyah ask a question. I don't know the answer. I'll come up with as close as I can off the top of my head. Latin is our go-to language in addition to some other roots that come from other sources. And in Latin, female is feminine. Feminina is femine, so that comes from Sanskrit. So that's where the fi comes from. And in Latin, male comes from masculine, masculine. I have to get the right exact, but it's an MA sound. So it's a language root inheritance. If you want to explain that to Maggie. And
just enroll her in Latin classes right away.
I look at Trevor probably if he says one time for one more, we are at 10 of, so we do have to get to the next classes and things like that. Do you want one more?
One more comment.
Okay, so you know we're out of time. So.
This is Allison again, and this is just a short funny because I grew up during a lot of feminism and. So, woman, oh wait, that's half man. So I'm a whoop person. Oh wait, that's got a son in it. So I'm a whooper daughter.
Okay. I like it. A whooper daughter.
I've often thought we should always use she and her because both of those words include he.
Yeah. All right, well, thank you very much. We will regather in 10 minutes.